We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast daily Euros edition with myself, Tim Stillman, back in the presenting chair again. And I was going to say, as ever, joined by Phil Costa, albeit Phil wasn't with us last night for reasons we'll go into in a minute. But Phil, great to have you back. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Still very warm here in Berlin, but hopefully this is kind of the home stretch of the heat wave and we can get back to some temperate weather so I can stop sweating every time I do these. But yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, we were the temperate weather has very much arrived in London. It's very grey. I've got all the lights on and the windows closed. So I think the summer is over here. But anyway, the reason, so myself and Paul did a kind of freeform jazz version of the podcast last night covering some of Saturday's games. But of course, you were at the big game on Saturday between Germany and Portugal at the Allianz. First of all, how did you find the game generally?
I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, whenever you're treated to six goals, you can't really complain, really. But for me, the dynamic was quite interesting because even when Portugal took the lead, I never felt as if, you know, the atmosphere changed at all. I thought it was very much still behind the team. And I could maybe feel that transmit towards the players who never sort of changed their approach, their intensity. And you kind of figured that eventually they would break Portugal down, and they did so in quite, you know, conclusive fashion, as we saw.
Yeah, absolutely. And just for listeners who perhaps haven't been to a football match or any other kind of sporting or mass event yet, since COVID, what was it like, it just in terms of getting into the stadium and the COVID secure element? Because I've been to the Allianz a few times in non-COVID times, and it's an absolute nightmare usually to get in and get to your seat. What was it like from that point of view?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was different. I mean, this was the first sort of game that I'd been to away from sort of since COVID, because obviously I used to go to Arsenal quite regularly before, and then, you know, that was obviously fairly routine. You just go and queue up and then you're in, basically. But then now it was kind of interesting because we were there with partners, so our route into the stadium was not the typical press one, should we say. So we kind of went through the back, and we had had our own sort of area. So it was obviously still the usual checks, the negative antigen test, what they call it, like here, they call it a Chanel test in Germany, which basically means like a quick test that they give you. And then actually, to be honest, we were quite lucky. We were set up pretty quickly, and yeah, we were just enjoying every moment of being there in the sunshine and with an amazing atmosphere. So just really pleased to be there and grateful to not have probably had what most of the other journalists had, which I presume was a much more rigorous entry, should we say.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Why don't we crack on with Sunday's games then? Only the two today, which really felt incredibly sparse, particularly as they kicked off at the same time. Like, not having that evening game or that afternoon game has kind of thrown me a little
bit.
Yeah,
the whole routine's gone.
Yeah, and it just really strikes you that three slots a day thing is gone now for the whole tournament. That's kind of it with the groups finishing up. But two games in Group A. Italy, of course, were already through, and then you've kind of got a bun fight between Wales and Switzerland. Turkey were kind of outsiders in terms of going for that third spot. But let's start with Wales-Italy, because I think that was the slightly more interesting game. And full disclosure, it's the one I watched. Both teams did, you know, were quite interesting with their starting lineups. Let's start with Wales, who changed to like a three at the back.
Yeah.
Almost with Ramsey as a kind of withdrawn striker, which I know they've done before. Can you maybe explain why you think they did that? And I guess, at least in the first half, why it didn't really seem to work?
I mean, the way they were playing it before in the warm-up games was with Harry Wilson in that position. Mm. And I'm not sure. Him and Aaron Ramsey are very different players. I mean, Wilson's very much a traditional wide man who, you know, with good technique, likes to cut inside and shoot. Ramsey's kind of, I would say, a bit more aware of space and what's kind of around him and when to run, where to run. And in theory, you can see it working, because obviously the plan was for Ramsey to withdraw a bit and then Bale and Daniel James would kind of come in from the wide areas and try and attack that space. So in theory, I could understand the move, and obviously Aaron Ramsey's in great form. So the decision itself didn't particularly surprise me. I think it was wise to rest Kiefer Moore, because I think he'd absolutely been in the wars during the first two games. I mean, he had like head bandages, and, you know, I think he was out bloody nosed and for a while. So I think it was nice to just wrap him in cotton wool. And
he's on the booking as well.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you're right, it didn't quite work. I've maybe felt like especially the midfield, there wasn't much of a link or a target to aim for with Ramsey's freedom. So yeah, as you mentioned, it didn't quite work, although I could understand it in theory.
Yeah, and I think Wales also had an eye on the next round, because they rested all three of the players that were on bookings. Meppham and Ben Davis as well were also kind of taken out. And Italy, obviously already qualified, they went one further and they made eight changes to the lineup. First of all, did the number of changes surprise you? And were there any changes in particular that kind of grabbed your interest before the game or even during the game?
No, I mean, the number of changes didn't surprise me at all. Like you said, they were already qualified, so there was no real, there was no stakes for them, because they were kind of there to enjoy the afternoon and give some squad players some minutes in their legs, you know. That's the thing with Italy. I mean, if you look at who came in, some of the quality there was still pretty ridiculous, and these are established, you know, European Champions League players. So in terms of who caught my eye, I think Alessandro Bastoni coming in into the defence to replace Chiellini was an interesting one. I really enjoyed his season for Inter. Usually he would play on the left side of a three, but today he was obviously back in the four, so maybe that was slightly alien for him, and I think he got done a couple of times by some pace. But in terms of his distribution from deep, I thought he was really useful and far superior to Chiellini in that aspect. And then obviously in midfield, there's Marco Verratti, who was supposed to be out for the tournament, but managed to get himself fit and ready. And you can just see that this guy's different class, you know. I mean, the touches, the awareness, the vision, and he's only a small guy. People don't realize how small he is. Especially when you see him up close in the flesh, but he's just a constant like terrier running around and scuttling around. And I think his attachment to yellow cards is quite something to behold, even though he didn't get one today. So, but yeah, another interesting one. And then obviously Pessina got the goal, really well taken. Bernardeschi, you know, Juve player, Chiesa, Juve player, Belotti, you know, there's just a lot of depth there. and people maybe wouldn't have had them down as one of the strongest squads. But when you can make eight changes and still play pretty well, maybe lacking some fluidity from your first 11, but you know, I was still impressed with how they played, and they still look dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's 30 games unbeaten for Italy now, equaling their all-time record that they set in the 1930s when they were the absolute powerhouse. I always think it's quite amusing, actually, when you come into tournaments, because essentially with international football, most people kind of just don't pay attention, like understandably, I think, don't pay attention during the qualifiers. So however that team did in the last tournament, or if they didn't get to the last tournament, everyone's kind of left with that impression. But Italy are a real... oh wow, they won all their qualifiers and they're actually quite good now, having not been in the last World Cup at all. What has been behind this resurgence for Italy, do you think?
Well, first of all, I think Roberto Mancini is a top class manager, and that's quite unusual for the international scene. Like I spoke about this with Elliot a few pods ago, if you look at the favourites of the competition, shall we say, like Belgium, they obviously have Roberto Martinez, but as good as he's done, he hasn't really won too much before. And, you know, Fernando Santos has stayed largely in Greece and Portugal, which are hardly European powerhouses of a league. You know, Deschamps, obviously Champions League finalist with Monaco in 2004, league own winner with Marseille. But that was a long time ago. And if you look at the general standard of the international coaches, Mancini's right up there. And I think he was... you know, there's a lot of pride in the Italy job, as you can see, even before him with Antonio Conte. And he's just really gone in there and put his own mark on the team, because as most will notice, they play with 4-3-3, which is quite strange for Italy, who are wedded to the three at the back for a long time for obvious reasons. And I think he's given people roles. He's brought some good young players through. I think some players are peaking at the right time, like Jorginho, Ciro Immobile, for example. But there's also a lot of young talent that he can bring in the likes of Nicolò Barella, Federico Chiesa, and these sorts of guys. And there's just a really nice blend in the whole squad. And I think everything's sort of coming together at the right time. And obviously, you can't argue with a 30-match unbeaten run, which even in international football is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder, you mentioned Martinez there as well. I wonder if Mancini and Martinez might kickstart a bit of a trend for managers who perhaps want to rebuild their reputations in the club game by going and managing like quite a big country. And then, because I think Martinez will probably get, maybe after the World Cup, he'll probably get a decent European job having rebuilt his reputation. I'm sure that will happen for Mancini as well. So I wonder if that might, if a lot of coaches might start to look at things like that. So during this game, you know, we had the kind of the odd thing where Switzerland are playing Turkey at the same time, and there's that kind of tension over who finishes third in this group. And frankly, it does look like whoever finishes third in this group goes through. And so there was that going on in the background with the goal difference between Switzerland and Wales, albeit I don't think Switzerland ever really threatened to overtake Wales. In general, are you a fan of this format where some third place teams go through? Because I kind of see that it giveth and it taketh away depending on the group, and it can create some exciting finishes. But I was looking at this today and I was thinking this would be so much better if it was definitely top two going through and Switzerland had to go and smash Turkey. And I just felt in this group it didn't work. But I wonder if the concept overall, what your thoughts are on it.
I think you've nailed it there. I mean, obviously, now people can point to some really dramatic final sort of days. As you mentioned there, there was a lot at stake for Wales and Switzerland there with goal difference. And then if you look at some other groups, obviously there's Russia and Finland both on three, but then Denmark, normally who would be out, can still qualify. And then there's Ukraine playing Austria, which is basically going to be a shootout. And then there's Scotland and Croatia, you know, who can also qualify via the third place means. But for me, I think it's kind of just takes a lot of the jeopardy away, because if you lose your first two games, you should not be anywhere near the next stage, in my opinion. And yet there's still a big opportunity for teams to go through if they, you know, win big in the last game or some results go their way with goal difference. And I just think that's kind of, you know, it's a bit ridiculous, really. I mean, even in the last Euros when Portugal went through and they didn't even win a game until the semi-final, you know, And it was, or was it even the final? I think they beat Wales in extra time in the semi-final. Mm. So it just kind of takes a lot of the jeopardy away from me. And I don't think there's a lot of urgency for the teams that maybe it would be, for example, what you said, if it was literally just the top two and there were two teams like battling out straight for that second place spot. Or I think it gives a lot of teams chances to be in the next round without pushing, you know. And I quite enjoy tournament football because in some games, like in the Champions League, for example, when there's an away goal and the other team are just going for it, or, you know, there's like 10 minutes of just madness at the end of the game, end to end, because, you know, who's going through, this could put this team out, or a goal here could put this team out, and it's just madness. And I love that because things open up. But with this, I never really feel that way. And that's, yeah, I probably lean towards that it's a bit ridiculous, but, you know, with an expanded tournament, this was always going to happen. So unfortunately, it's what we've got.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we saw, particularly after the Ampadu red card, I mean, there wasn't really any prospect of Wales getting a result, and it was about keeping it at 1-0, which they did quite well, albeit against an Italy side that didn't really need to score again. But the Wales are through to the round of 16, and they could get one of Finland, Russia, Denmark or Belgium. It looks unlikely, I'd say, to be Belgium. So, you know, Finland, Russia or Denmark in the round of 16 is a decent draw for them.
Definitely. Yeah.
How far do you think this Wales team can go?
I don't know. It's so difficult because I didn't give them a chance really in the last tournament, and obviously they got to a semi-final, and now I didn't really give them much of a chance again, and they just always seem to find a way. You know, I think especially with the managerial change, for obvious reasons that we know about, with Ryan Giggs, you know, there would have been no expectation for Robert Page to come in and guide this team to any kind of success, you know, regardless of who was picked and the talent within their ranks. But, you know, it's not just the typical minnows who sit back and look for the break. They have, you know, some really talented players, and I like the midfield. I like the defence. You know, as you mentioned, they can kind of alternate between a 4 and a 3. They've got the personnel to do it. And I think, you know, no one wants to play them because, as Hungary have shown, like, if you battle hard and you give everything on the pitch, which Wales do, it's hard for teams to beat you, no matter how good the opposition are. And you can just never count them out because they've got quality that can hurt you. But if they need to dig in and grind something out, they can do it. And those two qualities in knockout football are, you know, it's golden. It's basically a gold ticket for you if you can put everything together. So I think, as you mentioned, those teams that they could get, avoiding Belgium from that group would be an absolute result for them. And I find myself rooting for them more and more as the tournament goes on.
Yeah, a little bit like 2016 in that respect.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Italy's chances. I've gone into this weird phase now where I tipped Italy before the tournament, and now I feel like it's almost like a band that I kind of liked that everyone's discovered now, and I don't like them as much anymore.
What was the name of their 2006 album?
Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing, I actually bet on them to win in 2006 as well. And part of my logic was not just looking at their record, and everything you said about Mancini, I think, is quite true. But I kind of just think if you bet on Italy about every 15 years, that tends to be what Italy do. About every 15 years, every 15, 16 years, they have a really good tournament. And I just kind of felt they were due in a weird way. But I also have this thing where I think teams that really start quickly and win their groups easily and not the ones that go on to win tournaments. So instead of asking you whether you think Italy can win it, because I think it's clear they can, whether they will is another subject, but they can. I wondered if you've seen or you are aware of perhaps a weakness or something that maybe better teams than Switzerland, Wales and Turkey might be able to aim for.
Oof, I mean, having watched them in three games now, honestly, I have not really seen a team trouble them yet, which is quite alarming for anybody else. I think they've been really solid at the back. I think they've been really good and inventive in midfield, but also secure. And going forward, They've utilised their wing backs so well, and the fullbacks, particularly Spinazzola, who hasn't obviously wasn't playing today or starting, and they just look really organised and confident in everything that they're doing. And it's really difficult to pinpoint a weakness, because at the end of the day, you're kind of just clutching at straws for a team that's, you know, won every single game. But if I was to be really, you know, nitpicking, I would say I'm not sure they have many more gears to go up, if that makes sense. I could maybe see that in France and even Belgium, for example. But I think Italy are just playing at a really strong, consistent level, and this is them. I think they've started brilliantly. I think they've maintained that level of performance, but I don't see them maybe raising their levels to have like a monstrous semi-final or something. And that would be maybe one criticism from me, but I think it's really difficult to try and pinpoint something on a technical level, for example. I don't know if you've maybe seen something different.
No, definitely not. I do also wonder, obviously they played all of their group games in Rome.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe if they are drawn in a game where they take that Rome factor out, I mean, I'm not sure that has been a big factor. I think maybe complacency might become their biggest enemy at some point. Or, you know, look, if they play a France or a Belgium, you know how those big games go, they can turn on a sixpence and you're out and that's the end of it. Kind of reminds me a little bit of actually of Brazil at the last World Cup in 2018, and I was kind of banging a drum for Brazil and they lose to Belgium and everyone says they're useless, and actually they were quite unlucky in that Belgium game and they just got a suspension. And like I just, you know, that can happen, you know, to anyone. And I kind of think that might be the only thing that will stop Italy, if they pick up a suspension to someone really key. But yeah, I think they're, yeah, I'm quite happy with the fact that I tipped them before the tournament. Let's come on to the other game then, Switzerland-Turkey. Now, I want to talk about Shaqiri, because he scores a brilliant double in this game, one on the right foot, one on the left foot. And, you know, I'm looking at him and he's 29. He's had a couple of fairly underwhelming years at Liverpool. And I'm sure he must be looking to leave, and probably Liverpool would be happy to sell him this summer. What, I mean, first of all, what kind of club do you think that Shaqiri could expect to go to next?
I mean, for sure, I think he's going to move this year. I think Liverpool essentially got from him what they wanted. I mean, it was the 12 million clause, relegation clause from Stoke, I believe, that they signed him, and he was essentially going to be some squad fodder to kind of fill a space on the bench and for emergencies. They can kind of use him in late in games or in the FA Cup and stuff like that to kind of bulk out their squad. And I think he's done exactly what they wanted. But, you know, you can't doubt his quality. I mean, as you saw today, that first goal was absolutely outrageous on his weaker right foot. You know, he picked out that top corner absolutely perfectly. And I think maybe on a 2 or 3 year deal, some German clubs will be looking at him with interest. I mean, he speaks the language, you know, and obviously maybe an Eintracht Frankfurt or a Wolfsburg or a Leverkusen, someone just below the kind of the Dortmunds, the Bayerns and the RB Leipzigs, you know, maybe just that level below where he can kind of be their star player, maybe not with consistency. There might be an issue because he's been injured a lot, but I think he'd definitely be worth the gamble at like 15 million euros or something like that. So, or maybe a bit less considering the COVID market, but for sure I can see him heading to a team in Germany, but there's also Italy as well. But I can see him in Germany for the language, and, you know, he hasn't played there yet. So yeah, for sure he's Switzerland's key man, along with Mbolo this year. And I really enjoyed his goals today.
Yeah, I was going to ask, actually, you mentioned Mbolo there, because my next question was going to be, when Paul and I did this podcast last night and we were talking about Poland, and we were kind of saying, I can't think of anything to say about Poland other than they have Lewandowski up front and they have Szczesny in goal. And I really don't care about, or neither am I attracted to, anything else in their team. And I kind of look at Switzerland and I think, well, they're clearly built around Shaqiri. They've got Xhaka as well. And so I was going to ask you, especially if they go through, what else have they got? And I think you've mentioned Mbolo there. So what is it about him that that you've really enjoyed in this tournament?
I mean, looking at Switzerland, it's strange because they should be kind of a bit more entertaining and a bit more sort of welcoming for the neutral eye. Because, you know, if you look at their squad from head to toe, Jan Sommer, great keeper, been around in the Bundesliga. You know, there's Cher, who we know from the Premier League, Xhaka, Ricardo Rodriguez, Kevin Mbabu. But yeah, they just, I don't know, they just seem a bit stale. And you don't really expect them to wow anybody. But I think Brill Mbolo has wowed some people in this tournament, particularly in the first game. I thought he kind of seems like an odd fit because we don't really know if he's a striker. He's played behind the striker for Gladbach, even on the left, and he's never been a natural fit. They've kind of moved him around. But I think in this two-striker system, he kind of has license to roam around, Seferovic, who I know he scored today, but he's one of the most frustrating players I've ever watched. And he kind of likes the duels and he can hold himself well in duels, but he can also run the channels and he's quick and he's direct and he's, you know, he's slowly adding some more consistency to his finishing. And I think obviously Shaqiri is the star quality that we mentioned and he pulled through today against Turkey, but, you know, always having someone else capable of producing is useful for any team. And I think he can do it. For me, he doesn't really get involved in the game too much, and sometimes he can go missing. But if you need a chance to be scored, he's probably one of the two I would bet for Switzerland. And I think he's got something that can separate, you know, two teams, basically. So, yeah, keep an eye on him because he's got that match sort of winning, changing quality.
And assuming that Switzerland do go through as the third, as one of the best third place teams, can they go any further than the round of 16, do you think?
I would be inclined to say no. I mean, obviously, it depends on who they get. But I expect more from Switzerland because they have a lot of experienced, you know, steady players who should be kind of comfortable in this environment. But I just don't get any inspiration from them, which is... You know, I've been proven wrong before with Germany and Turkey, but I just feel like they play within themselves a lot. And I'm not sure if that's their playing personnel or if they've kind of been instructed to be conservative. But whenever I've watched them, I've never felt like, wow, they're really putting on a show here. I mean, they should have beaten Wales. They went ahead and they didn't press down on their neck, shall we say, and Wales kind of grew back into the game. And against Italy, there was just nothing from them the whole game. So I think, I mean, they just probably deserve to be there just about ahead of Turkey, who were abysmal. But I don't see them going much further, no.
No, and it just seems to me that Switzerland go out in the round of 16 of every tournament and never do anything different ever since that 2006 World Cup where they went out without actually conceding a goal. If I remember correctly, we can't avoid it any longer, Phil. Your boys, Turkey.
My boys.
I don't know what the Turkish for anything is, really, but I definitely don't know the Turkish for root and branch review. What on earth went wrong for Turkey in this tournament?
I really have no idea. I think individually, I couldn't think of one player, maybe Cengiz Under, who was, you know, a threat and consistently good with his control and his passing. I think he was probably playing at the highest level, but that was not a high bar. Really disappointed just with it. Their defending. I mean, they had the joint best defensive record in the whole tournament, and to leave having lost three games with a minus seven goal difference is just... I don't even know what to say about that. And defensively, they were shocking. Attacking-wise, they were really terrible. I mean, today they were kind of just spamming long shots. It was like me on FIFA when I'm frustrated and losing. I know they had that sort of opening blitz in the first 5 minutes when they had about four shots on target before Switzerland scored. And then obviously Seferovic scores the first one on target for Switzerland. So, I mean, for me, they improved today. I did see signs of life. but it was just too little too late. And I think there's going to be a big inquest when they get back, because that was not acceptable. And I think obviously there's no divine right for anybody to be guaranteed into the next round, or, you know, to win the tournament. But having done so well in qualifying, having a number of players who came off an impressive season, you know, they had league winners in there, they had some of the best assisters in Serie A in there, they had, you know, defensively some of the best young prospects in Europe, and it was just a disaster from the first minute to last. And yeah, I'm sure they've lost people a lot of money over the course of these 7 days. So yeah, not a lot of happy people with Turkey, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was just about to say that, actually. I think there are some valuations that have gone down on the back of this. But that's Group A wrapped up. So Italy definitely through, Wales definitely through, Switzerland probably through. Mm-hmm. But that will shake out in the next couple of days. Turkey, the first team. Well, I know North Macedonia were knocked out, weren't they? Yeah. But Turkey finishing on nil pois, mm-hmm. Indefinitely. So tomorrow we're finishing Group C, I believe, which is Ukraine, Austria, mm-hmm. and Netherlands, Macedonia. And then in Group D, we've got Russia, Denmark, and Finland versus Belgium as the 8 o'clock games, 8 o'clock UK time. Yeah. Which of those games do you have your eye on?
I think Ukraine, Austria could be really decent, actually. They're both on the dreaded 3 points. Austria won their first game against North Macedonia, and Ukraine won their second game against North Macedonia. So, you know, they'll both fancy themselves. I think Ukraine have maybe a higher ceiling in the whole tournament than Austria do, even though Austria have a lot of talent within their ranks. But as we spoke about on our first pod together, there was just something lacking from them, especially with David Alaba being forced further and further back. And I just think Ukraine are well coached with more potential to really change the game. I think they have more avenues of doing it, whether that be from Andriy Yarmolenko, Ruslan Malinovsky coming from deep. I think Roman Yaremchuk has really impressed, but also they're quite strong defensively as well. And I think they could maybe hold their own against Austria, who have maybe fired a few blanks, should we say, even though they won the first game against North Macedonia with 3 goals. So I think for me, that's the standout game. But obviously, you know, there's a lot on the line for Finland and Russia and Denmark. So I would love Denmark to be one of those best third place finishers. I think it would be such an amazing story, especially after everything they've been through, not only as a squad, not only as friends, but also as a nation. I think it would be such an incredible story. But there's also Finland, if they could pull off something against Belgium, you know, unlikely. But yeah, I think we'd have to see how those play out. But for me, the one to watch is the earlier kickoff, Ukraine against Austria.
Yeah, I do wonder with that game, though, if it's level with 20 minutes to go, like a draw probably carries both teams through. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder if you'll get that. I think a little bit like we got in Italy-Wales today, where that last half an hour was... Yeah, okay, 1-0's kind of fine for both of us. I think for me, I'm Russia v Denmark is the mm-hmm. one I'm really looking forward to, because, yeah, for all the reasons you say, I really want to kind of... I'd love to see Denmark play like they played against Belgium. If they play like they played against Belgium, I think they'll win quite well, and particularly if they're chasing goal difference, because they're on -2. So they probably need to bring that up to a plus. So mm-hmm. they probably need goals. And I think if Denmark can get an early one, I think that would be a great game to watch if they're thinking we've got to win 3-0. That might be where you get a little bit back from that third place spot. But yeah, I think that's the game I really have my eye on. But yeah, looking forward to, I think I'll definitely watch Ukraine, Austria. I'm not going to bother with Netherlands versus Macedonia, to be honest. But anyway, thanks very much again, Phil. And thanks for your time and for your insight.
No, my pleasure. It's always good to chat about things. And actually, it's quite fun for me, because I can, obviously you watch the games, but I can maybe look at things a bit differently. So it's always nice to come and talk about it with someone else, because they could always say something different, you know? So I'm enjoying doing these, and I hope they're going down well with the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, like, I get an excuse to watch these games, and I can tell my wife it's work, which is absolutely fantastic.
Win-win. Yeah.
But anyway, that's the end of my presenting stint, I think, anyway. But Elliot will be back tomorrow night once he and his long-suffering wife are back from their weekend away. And so, yeah, Elliot and Phil will be with you reviewing Monday's games tomorrow night. Until then, thanks very much for listening, and see you on the other side.